Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is a blackjack player who goes by the handle Sassy Red. Sassy Red, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks for having me, fellas.
There's obviously no one path to become an advantage player. But even with that, Sassy Red started out quite a bit out of the mainstream. She, for example, started out as a child of missionary parents and was at least partially raised in West Africa. Sassy Red, how did being raised in Africa help you prepare for your AP future?
Well, it's a really interesting question. I hadn't given it a whole lot of thought until recently, but I started to conceptualize a casino as a foreign country or foreign environment. And I think living in crossing cultures as a teenager, you know, going into that culture as a pre-adolescent, coming back out of it as a young adult, and then reintegrating into this culture made me pretty adaptable to foreign environments. And it also made me culturally sensitive because there are a whole lot of different people you see in casinos. So I can tend to relate with lots of different types of people pretty easily.
Did you ever face like guns and things like that in Africa?
Well, actually, I was in Africa during a coup, which is a government takeover in 1980, and did cross the border between into the country where that had happened. So the border crossing was a little dicey. So yeah, we saw some machine guns there. But on a trip back to Africa after I had left as an adult, I was going to visit my parents. We had a bomb scare way before 9/11. I think this was 1983 or 1984. We had a bomb scare on an airplane. We were forced landed in Nigeria, and there were machine guns. They, in my face as I got off the airplane, they tore everything out of the plane. All the luggage was all over the tarmac. We were there for about 6 hours. So that was a little nerve wracking, wondering, are we going to get out of here? But it was fine. So I've been exposed to types of situations like that. And actually, again, in 1999, I was living in Paraguay, South America, another coup. The president actually shot or had his vice president assassinated about a mile from our house. And the airspace was closed. The borders were closed. There were riots in the streets. So I've been in those types of environments in my life. So I've been around chaos.
Why were you living in Paraguay?
I was with my family, my husband and children at the time, also doing mission work. So that was a short stint. It was about 18 months.
Oh. And how did you get interested in blackjack?
That was purely accidental. I was single at that time. I'm trying to remember the year. It was about 5 years ago, I think. And I had a friend that I had no idea loved to be in casinos. And apparently, his car wasn't working. And he called me on a Saturday. He goes, you want to go on a day trip? Let's go up to Metropolis. So I live in Tennessee. I guess that was the closest casino there. I was like, that's dumb. And he's like, no, let's go. It'll be fine. I'll buy you a drink. Well, what I didn't know at the time was he just wanted my car. But so we went up there and I watched him play slots and I thought it was dumb. But at the time I had a son working casino surveillance in Maryland. And I told him about hanging out in a casino. He goes, Mom, if you're going to hang out in a casino with Rob, because he'd already said, let's do it again. We'll go to Tunica and the hotel's nice. And maybe I can even get a trip to, you know, the Beau Rivage and Biloxi. You'll love it. It's beautiful. And you can hang out by the pool and you don't have to play, blah, blah, blah. So my son said, learn to play blackjack. It's got a really low house edge. So I started to study and I found Wizard of Odds. And the game kind of hooked me. And I was a total ploppy. Then I, you know, didn't know much, but I started to kind of fall in love with the game and played as a ploppy for a little while, but then got really dissatisfied with that. And
started, because you were losing?
Yeah, well, I didn't lose a lot, but I'm a missionary kid. I lived in the third world. It didn't take much for me to go, this is not okay. And I don't have much of an addictive personality. I'll try almost anything once. I don't know if I should say that on the air, but
so you have one. Not? You have one child. Is that what you said?
I have three. I have three adult sons.
Wow, sounds like she did at least
more than once. But anyways, so I started reading more about blackjack and finding it can be beat. And I had heard people talk about cards, and I thought, I could never do that. I just dismissed it. I didn't think I was smart enough or whatever it took.
You have to be Rain Man.
Yeah. I guess that was the concept or my perception of it at the time. But as I studied it, I thought these concepts are really simple, and found Blackjack Apprenticeship, just pulled a deck of cards out one day and counted it down. And I was really slow, but I took all day. I just became fascinated, kind of obsessed with it. If anything, I'm tenacious. So I don't know that I'm exceptionally bright or have any other talents, but I am. When I get a hold of something, I won't let it go. So got connected with Blackjack Apprenticeship, decided I wanted to perfect my game. And that's kind of where it started then.
So you went to a boot camp?
I did. I reached out for the first time to the BJA folks. I believe it was March or April of 2017. I was at the June boot camp. I studied all the drills and all that. Failed the first test out. Worked my ass off for the next 8 months. Went back in August and tested out then. And decided I was going to take this very seriously.
And what did you decide your bankroll was going to be to start with?
Well, before, during this phase, I was kind of playing around with a $5,000 bankroll, but quickly found an investor who said, let's bump this up into some serious stakes. So is that something that I should reveal on the air?
That's up to you. I mean, it's your so it won't affect us.
once I passed the test out, I knew I had a perfect game. I played lower stakes for two more months. I'm trying to remember what year this is. Halloween 2017, we decided to put the bigger bankroll into play, and I started with $50,000.
And now, you mentioned that your son was working in surveillance. What did he think about this?
Well, he thought it was kind of cool. My son actually would be a fabulous AP. He's got a brilliant mind. Actually, all of my sons would be. But he's not in a stage of life. He's got two babies. So I don't think.
Is he still working in surveillance?
He is not. Oh. He's working top secret stuff for the Navy.
So might he want to come on the show and talk about working in surveillance?
I'll ask him about that.
Yeah, we're always trying to get, and for the listeners out there, we're always trying to get surveillance people to come on the show. So if you work in surveillance and want to come on the show, you don't have to use your real name. You can use Sassy Blue and Sassy Red is taken.
So.
Yeah. And in case you want to come to the studio and do it, I can tell you right now that Richard's going to be sick that day, and he's going to have to call in.
Yeah, I can call in.
But, okay. So, you professionally, you were a marriage therapist for at least part of this time.
After my marriage, I was married for 23 years.
Uh-huh.
And when that ended, I'm one of these people where I had to figure out what happened. I think I always had a bent towards the helping fields. I had a bachelor's degree in sociology. Put that aside. I know we're going to talk about this a little bit, but supported my former husband's endeavors for those 20 years, and then decided I wanted to reinvestigate the counseling field. And you know, I wanted to become a counselor, just partially to work through my own stuff, but because I had always felt like that was a field I wanted to go into. And so I have a master's degree in marriage and family therapy, but also was working for a corporation as a tobacco treatment specialist. So I was the director of their tobacco treatment program for their employees. So I worked sort of in the addictions field as well. And that background really helped me a lot with my AP work.
How?
Well, I had the tool. It gave me tools to understand and then implement ways to handle the emotions, negative emotions, and fear that's involved in being a high-stakes blackjack player. So my work as a therapist and in the tobacco treatment field mainly was helping people navigate change and or heal from painful experiences. And often that pain could involve the pain of loss or the pain of rejection. And I was realizing that I was facing both of those things in the casino, and to deal with vulnerability. And so all of those things kind of came into play. It took me a while to realize it, but I knew that I was struggling. I knew the mechanics of my game were good. I knew how to scan a casino, find the right table, look for pen, understand the rules of the game, calculate my EV, calculate the house edge, put my bets, bankroll coaching. I knew my risk of ruin. I could get my bet spreads out there, but I was emotionally kind of a wreck. And I was like, if I don't figure this out, I'm not going to make it.
And was it the fluctuations, or was it the kind of fear of the pit, or what was causing you to be emotionally a wreck?
Well, I think it was a combination of things. When you are in that environment of, you know, having those high bets out, there's a lot of things happening. I was noticing physical symptoms, my heart racing, my ears ringing, my jaw clenching. And so I was experiencing chronic stress. And we'll talk too about the loneliness of being on the road. So that was a factor too, disconnected, isolated. And afraid. And so,
but was the stress the fear of losing the money, or was it the fear of both, what the casino might do to you?
Both. And, you know, and so when you're dealing with this, because intellectually you know what to do, and intellectually you've heard all the time, you got to play like a computer. And I'm like, wait a minute, I'm not a computer, and I'm feeling all of this. And so I started to conceptualize this as separate what you think from what you know, or separate what you feel from what you know. And so that's kind of when this whole concept started developing for me, that it's okay to feel afraid. It's a fear of loss, obviously, because I was playing some pretty – I've never seen swings of $20,000 in one day before. I mean, I used to make that in a year. And so I could see that come and go in a day. That takes a lot of getting used to.
Yes, it does.
And even though I'd ramped my betting slowly, when that actually starts – you got – 8 max bets on the felt because of splits and double downs, and that swing one way or the other could be like $5,000. My emotions were jacked through the roof, and it would take me a while to come down from that, even though I kept telling myself, this is what you're supposed to do. So why are you feeling this intensely? And my objective today is just to help normalize that feeling that is okay, but you've got to learn to calm it, or you're going to make mistakes at the table, or you'll quit because it's too hard to deal with it all the time.
Well, so. That's also quite a jump from a $5,000 bank to a $50,000
bank. It is.
But so once you got the $50,000 bank, you didn't immediately go in and start betting to a hands of 800.
I took 2 months. I did start my top bet, I think before that was around 2x75 or 2x90.
Had the 5,000.
Yeah, and I went to 2x150, kind of hedged it up to 2x2, and then went all the way to 2x3. And I still struggle. I tell people, I think I've found my sweet spot. I don't know if I'll ever go past that.
I'm getting 2x3.
I'm getting a lot of pressure to go 2x5, and I've tried it a few times, but I haven't quite conquered that side yet.
2x300.
Yeah, 2x300 is my top bet right now.
Actually, okay.
For 50,000, that seemed like.
That's low for really 50,000. Yeah, mm-hmm. But. Also, I have a aversion to 500, mm-hmm. You know, so.
I think I do too. It's not rational, but I think I do.
Well, no, but I think the casinos view a $500 bet as you're crossing a threshold. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you bet 2x450, oh, well, they're not betting 500. You know what I mean? There's something about 500. And if you're going to go to 5, you can probably go all the way to 8, because a $500 bet and an $800 bet, I think in the casino's mind, is still pretty – you hit the next threshold at 1,000.
I think so. And I think I'm still learning those things. And, you know, I was out there. I have a great community, and I would bounce those types of things off them and try to learn the tolerant shops and things like that. But back to dealing with those emotions, I think I started to – this helped me to – I love analogies and metaphors. And I thought, you know, when those high bets are out, you're vulnerable. So you're dealing with fear of loss, fear of vulnerability, fear of rejection, because to me, that's what happens when the pit box backs you off. You've just been rejected, and I like to be liked. I like to be, you know, that everybody thinks, oh, I'm awesome. And so when – a pit who has been friendly and giving you comps now won't speak to you, it hurts my feelings, and I don't like it. But, you know, so
it comes with the territory.
It does. And again, I just had to keep my message in my head going, these people don't care about you. They're doing their job. It's not personal. So that's my message in my head. This is not personal. But it felt personal. I mean, it still does sometimes.
Sure.
Yeah.
And how soon did the back offs? Do you get backed off a lot?
I have 24 back offs in about 14 months. It was pretty average, I think.
Okay. So you must be getting used to it by now, I would think.
I just got back. Can I say a name of a casino on the air?
It's up to you. So.
I just don't know what protocol is. I got backed off from a very popular shop in town 2 days ago, and I hated to lose it. And actually, I scooted out of there. I didn't technically get backed off, but, you know, I'm getting pretty good at the spidey senses now. And there was somebody in the pit on the phone that I had no interaction with. And I was like, yeah, they're coming for me. And the shoe had tanked, and I had gotten 4 hours, and I had had my full spread out. And so I was like, it's probably time to go. And so, go ahead, Richard.
Sort of MO to sit and play, or do you tend to hit and run, what's your approach?
It depends on where I am and what the environment is. I hate hit and runs because they wear me out. I'd much prefer to camp because that's kind of my lazy side. And I got spoiled. I had two very tolerant shops. The closest to me, all of them were 3 hours away. I live in a state with no casinos. My closest airport is 2 hours. So for anybody who complains that they can't make this work because there's no casinos around them, I've made it work. But the travel is a bear. But again, the whole Mission Kid thing and being on the road with the former husband that helped prepare me for that. So I prefer to camp. I will hit and run when I have to. But the shop, when I colored up, they said, thanks a lot, and used my name. And I had been playing unrated. So I was like, yeah, it was coming. I mean, it confirmed what I knew. So I won't play there for a while. But that was my second back off from there. So I'll be back.
And have you tried changing your look at all?
I don't think it's worth it to me. I don't think I really could. I'm all kind of distinctive. People always say, I remember you. So I'm more inclined to change my name. Mm. So I'm actually planning that. But with your indulgence, I wanted to get back to one of the things that helped me. I was envisioning when I had those high bets out as actually being on a battlefield. And when those high bets are being fired out, it's like somebody in combat has now exposed themselves to the enemy. That's where they're going to engage, but that's what they have to do in order to take the ground, the hill. I envision it as a hill. And if you don't get the max bets out, if you don't expose yourself to that enemy, you're never going to accomplish your goal. And my goal is to make enough money at this in 3 years so that instead of working for 10 more years, which had been my plan, I only have to work for 3.
And how's that going so far?
I've hit my goals. I'm taking an AV beating right now, but that's, you know, short-lived.
Yeah. So. But, it seems like you might want to get above that 2x300.
I might. I can do it.
You can take baby steps, right? You can go to 2x400.
I can make my goals with 2x3, but we'll see. So.
How many hours a year are you trying to play?
About 600.
Okay, well, that's a lot, especially given that the airport's 2 hours away. And
it's not easy. Yeah, so it's a lot.
So you mentioned one of the negative feelings you were doing was loneliness. That implies maybe that you're playing by yourself rather than with a partner. Was that true?
It was true, is still technically true, but I have made a change. I played a full year. Really more than a year. I quit my corporate job February 2018. So this has been my sole source of income since mid-February of 2018. And I was playing pretty seriously from Halloween right before that. So it's been almost a year and a half. And I kind of loved the independence. And, you know, I've been playing rated most of this year, so I've been comped very well. I got a lot of comp value. Not sure why I was able to get away with that a little bit more than some others. I decided it was worth it to me because I had to travel so much. If I had casinos closer to home and wanted to preserve some of those, I may have made a different decision. And I know the comp party will end, but I'm hoping to milk it for one more year. But they were hard alone. Now, I have a life partner, significant other right now. We would talk twice a day. He's very good to stay in touch with me. But when you're in the middle of a beatdown and there's just no one there and nobody to just kind of put your head against their shoulder and just go, this really sucks. I really hate this. Why am I doing this? It gets hard. And, you know, you alone at night, and you have to get back up by yourself and do it again.
Especially in the middle of Iowa, in the middle of winter, and it's horrible.
It's super hard. And so this year, another AP who I had met and spoken to and really believed in his game moved closer to me, and we've since been traveling together. We're not technically teammates. We haven't done any team play, but I was like, will you just please drive? Drive for me. And we picked up a rental car. Actually, we played in Arizona last week to, you know, at the same time, but we split up and do, you know, he'll be at one casino and I'll be at another. We picked up a rental car and it died in the middle of the highway, just completely. And I was really glad I wasn't alone during that. We were on the side of the road at midnight for 3 hours waiting for a replacement. I'm like, I'm so glad you're here. So that was, you know, good.
Is your significant other understanding of you being on the road with a male partner?
That's very unique. I am with a great, trusting, respectful, amazing man. And I can't imagine how I couldn't do it. But
I mean, there's two issues there. One, you're on the road with a man, and two, you're gambling professionally. I mean, and he's fine with that as well.
Right? He's great. He trains me when I'm home. He's actually a pretty good AP himself. You know, we have dreams of doing this together, but he's got some pretty serious obligations where he is right now that he can't just walk away from. So work-wise. And so we'll see. We'll see if that ever comes to fruition. I keep telling him, I don't know, I got maybe 2 years left in me, and by then I'll just have to travel around with you. So we'll see how that works out. But he's been great, and it surprises me as much as anybody, but I value that relationship so much, and he knows I'm not going to, you know, mess that up.
Must be, at least being a woman is different than being a man. Duh.
I would imagine so.
So have you experienced any extra problems being a woman or extra advantages being a woman that you can share with us?
I think it's really hard to know. I get that question all the time. And some people assume I get more time at a casino because I'm a woman. And I just don't think that's true. If it is true, I think it's harder for me to go back. You know, and I think there is, and I could be wrong about this because I try really hard not to employ sexist thinking. But casinos tend to kind of be, at least seems to me, to be a good old boys club, and they don't like it when a woman beats them. But I could be off base with that. So, they seem to be particularly mad at me when they discover that I'm an advantage player. I think maybe because they underestimated me at first, which may give me a little extra time. But I've been backed off before. I've sat down before. I've been backed off after one shoe a couple of times. So I don't know that it gives me more time. I think they're more open to wanting to give me the benefit of the doubt, which then once they do and then they get proven wrong, again, they don't like that.
Yeah, I had Kat Hulbert, who's been on the show, said that she did feel like in the beginning she got more time, but as you just said, they tend not to forget who you are because there are so fewer women players.
Yeah.
So once they've seen you, they tend to remember it.
I walked into a casino I hadn't been in for about 6 months, maybe longer, and a dealer kind of called out to me. I was just walking through the pit. He goes, "Hey, good to see you." He goes, "I remember everything about you. I remember what your boyfriend does." I was like, I have a big mouth. I just need to stop talking about my personal life. But I do that to like make people like me. And there has to be a balance there too, because I don't want to be that memorable. So I was like, just tone it down a little bit. So
do you, is what he remembered about your boyfriend actually have anything to do with what your boyfriend is, or was that a whole nother story that you were just weaving out of whole cloth?
No, I mean, I'm not a very good liar. Being in therapy business, you really focus on truth and transparency and authenticity and vulnerability, and none of those things lend themselves real well to deception. And so that has been a struggle for me too. And with my conservative Christian upbringing, so I'm in this casino deceiving people, being afraid of loss, being afraid of being disciplined by the pit. Those were the types of things I was struggling to overcome. So I'm not a good liar, so I tell as much truth as I can. So when I talk about him, I actually talk about what he does because it he's successful, and that gives a, you know, gives me a reason. I said, you know, I get to play with his money, and when I win, he's really happy. And when I lose, he's just like, that's okay, baby. And so people buy that, and, you know, so that helps. But I also tell the truth for cover. People ask me why I'm in town. And I lived in Nashville for 25 years. I was married to a successful musician. I actually have a degree in therapy, and I know how to talk about it. And I say, I'm a therapist for privileged clients who are in the entertainment business. And if they call me and they're making a movie or making a record, I just go. I'll do a two-hour session, and now I'm stuck here, so I'm going to play. That's my cover story. Maybe I shouldn't say that on the air. But, yeah. And they, if they Google me, they'll see me in a therapy. That's the only thing that ever comes up when I Google myself is the firm that I was with before.
You've been backed off 24 times, you said?
Yep.
Presumably, you're going to lose track of that number after a while.
We'll see.
If you write it down, right? You
keep records. I write it down every time.
Every back off, have there been any that are particularly memorable or particularly hurtful or something like that?
They've been pretty run-of-the-mill, and only two for me, you know, stick out. And I think most people will go, that's just pretty normal. But I only had one escort to my car where I was trespassed. It was in Southern California. And the security guard just wanted to talk about how much more money I made than him. And, you know, could he learn it? And he was very sweet. But I'd never had somebody stand in a garage and watch me actually leave a property before. So that was interesting. I was like, you guys are scared of this little 5'2" nothing woman. I thought it was amusing. I only got an hour and a half there. It was a really good game. So I don't think I'll ever I won't mess with a trespass. So I have another trespass in downtown Vegas, and I hated to lose that store too. But my other back off that I remember was also in downtown Vegas, and a pit boss just came up over my shoulder and swatted my chip, that my purple chip that I put on the table, swatted it away from the dealer and said, we're not taking any more action from you, and just walked off. Like, he never looked me in the face or anything. I was just kind of left there standing going, what just happened? So other than that,
no back roomings.
I would never go. I would stand my good. There's no way anyone's ever going to get me in a back room. That will never happen.
So, famous last words.
Right. That's not going to happen. So
we're talking to Sassy Rhett. We're going to take a brief commercial break. And
Before we do, I just want to ask. So when you get backed off, do you cash out or do you hit the door?
I actually cash out because I travel so far. And I think with my age, I've never had trouble cashing out. You know, younger people might have more difficulty than me, and I do play rated a lot, so most of these...
Oh, they already have your
They
ID
already
anyway,
have my stuff, so, and yeah. I want the money when I leave the door. I just figure they already have my picture. I understand why people advise don't do it. For me, I've just made a very calculated decision. I'm leaving with the money, so that's what I do.
All right. So, as I said before Richard so rudely interrupted me, we're going to take a brief commercial break. We'll be right back talking to Sassy Red.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In April, the promotion is free buffets. On Monday through Thursdays, earn 300 points by 1 p.m. and get a free lunch buffet. Earn an additional 300 points by 8 p.m. and you get a free dinner buffet. If you do not earn the 300 points prior to 1 p.m., but earn 600 points prior to 8, you earn the dinner buffet. You get vouchers from the kiosk for these buffets. These vouchers do not have to be used on the day earned, but they all expire in early May. Also, if you have enough vouchers, you may treat several others in addition to yourself. If you have provided the South Point with your email address, you'll receive $20 every weekend in April. It's too late to get this bonus for this month, but they do this promotion two or three times a year. So if you live close to the South Point, it's worth it providing your email address. At videopoker.com is the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Wheel Poker Deluxe. This is a game where you pay an extra 5 coins per game, meaning triple play costs 20 coins, 5 play costs 30 coins. And the bonuses come on dealt trips, full houses, and quads, slightly different for Deuces Wild variations. If you get one of these bonuses, you spin the wheel. When the wheel spins, it lands on a drawing opportunity. Sometimes it's 100 play, 4 to a flush. Sometimes it's 10 play with a pair of aces. Sometimes it's triple play, 4 to the royal, etc. There is no skill involved in the hold for the bonus, and the bonus is earned on the draw, meaning that if you know the strategy for the base game, you know the strategy for the wheel poker deluxe version. Surprisingly, the triple play version always pays a bit more than the five play version. For example, on 9-6 double-double bonus, the base game is 98.98%. The five play version of Wheel Poker Deluxe is 99.31%. And the triple play version pays 99.47%.
All right, so we're back. Have you ever been physically afraid while playing blackjack?
Only twice. I was about to say once, but I guess it was actually twice. It's funny the things you learn. You know, the more time you get in, the more times you've been in a city. I remember the first time being in Vegas, I literally thought I was on a different planet. The traffic was, I didn't know if I could navigate the city. Then you just start to feel stronger. It's like, if I can do that, I've crossed the George Washington Bridge by myself. I was like, wow, I did that. Okay.
In Vegas?
I went all the way to New York. I went from Vegas to New York. I mean, I've played literally from Maine to California last year. I've hit a lot of states. But so that's getting a little easier. I was at Mandalay Bay. And I read an exit sign wrong. Sometimes the simplest things will trip me up. And I went out a door. There was an exit sign above it. And it was a exit only door. There was no way back in. And I was on a loading dock in an alley behind Mandalay Bay at 1 a.m. And I turn around. No handles. No door. I'm just there. And I was like, uh-oh. And so I started walking towards the strip. You just like go towards the light because it was dark there. And I got about halfway, you know, I'm speed walking towards the strip because I figured there are cameras and lights out there. And I did notice there was a man behind me. And he was he was behind me. And so I got on the phone, woke my fella up, not to freak him out, but I just had to have somebody on the phone with me. And I said, look, I'm in an alley behind Mandalay Bay. There's a man behind me just on the phone with me. I said, if he starts to close the distance between me, I'm going to hang up and call 911. But I don't think he is, because a woman can tell. We have spidey senses in the back of our heads. I mean, it's just we have it from the time we're teenagers. We can tell if someone is closing the distance behind us. And he didn't. And so I started to relax a little bit, but man, I wanted to hit that strip really bad. So that was the first time. And then once I was playing in a pretty rural spot in the mountains, and I had actually had a plane to catch. The airport was about an hour away, and I was going to go to a different state. And I played decent stakes. You know, I can have several buy-ins at the table. And I was trying to figure out a graceful way to – this was a place I frequented. I got like 200 hours at the shop before they backed me off. And so they were tolerating my action. So I wanted a graceful way to leave the table. And I wasn't quite out of time, but the shoe had tanked. And I just said, this is it. I'm finished. And said, I've got a flight to catch, which was true because I like to tell the truth in the casinos. And this man at the casino goes, are you going to such and such airport? Me and my big mouth and my truth-telling ways. I was like, yeah. He goes, can you give me a ride? And I'm like, no. And he snarls at me, what? You think I'm going to hurt you? And I'm thinking, you expect me to take your word for it? I mean, he's seen me pulling all this money and I'm going to get in a car with him and go an hour away. And so I did ask for a security escort to my car that day because I didn't know if he was going to follow me. That's it, really. I'm not used to being afraid.
Neither of those really had anything to do with the casino people or really blackjack. The guy saw you had a lot of money, but
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just being alone in an environment that can involve people you don't know what their character is like and that who know you have money. So that makes you feel vulnerable.
Sure.
So we know you count cards at blackjack. Is there anything else you do in the AP world or interested in getting into?
Very little right now. like I said, I have to use all of my focus to be good at anything, and I haven't burned out blackjack for myself yet. So that's my focus, because I want to be really good at it. And I don't really want my attention divided, although there can be advantages to taking a break and knowing how to exploit other things. I'm not very good at it. I've had some others in the AP community kind of give me a high level overview of a few things, and I'm like, I just, shuffle tracking, hole card. I don't have the patience for hole carding. I don't understand poker. I do on a very high level, but not, I'd like to learn video poker. I probably will at some point when I feel like.
I know a guy who wrote a lot of books.
You did? Yeah, I might pick up one of those books, because sometimes it's nice to just stop counting in your head. I mean, I wake up counting. It's ridiculous. But so yes and no. I'm not doing anything else really right now. Little bit of slot stuff, not much. Just to offset expenses, baby stuff. But I might pick up more video poker. We'll see. So if I have something else I can do and I can get my man out counting cards, that'd be great. But I don't know if that will happen or not.
Well, you indicated you kind of thought you were going to retire from this in 2 years.
Right.
And then you kind of said, well, your man might want to start joining you in 2 years. These kind of seem like
contradictions.
Yeah, a little bit. So if you're ready to retire, you've reached your goal of however many dollars that number is, mm-hmm. and he said, let's give this a try together. How do you think that's going to go?
I have no idea. One thing I like about this is we can cross those bridges when we come to them. This is a very dynamic, fluid environment that really energizes me. It's one of the things I like. I had some pretty intense goals. I met my EV goals last year. I was a little under my hour goals, but I met my EV goals, and I'm tired right now because I have been having, some AV beatdowns a little bit. Just really more wild swings. I haven't broken through to my next all-time high yet. It's been a little while, longer than any other one I've had. So I'm a little tired, but I just told myself I don't have to meet those goals in 3 years. I could work fewer hours, spread them out, stay at home, relax, rejuvenate, but we'll just have to see how it goes.
Have you had any extended losing streaks?
I don't know if you'd consider the one I'm in right now extended. I'm 150 hours break even. So, but before that, I had a $60,000 winning streak. So it's not really all that surprising to me. I'm a little under EV right now. I'm a little further under EV than I like. I'm a little mad about it. So I actually play better when I'm losing, I think.
Well, you tend to get more hours when you're losing.
Thank you for affirming that. I was like, am I just weird? Because I do
no,
get more.
No, the casino's more tolerant when you're losing, yes. So you can play longer. Uh-huh. So, yeah.
Yep.
It's funny, in video poker, it's the other way around. It's like we have the same swings in video poker where there's the same positive and negative variance. But after you've just hit them for a couple royals in 3 days, you feel bulletproof. So, you just want to go back to the casino and get another load. Yeah. Whereas the game hasn't changed and it's still the highs and still the lows. But after you've beaten your head against the wall for X number of days or X number of dollars, whatever it is, it's like not quite so eager to get back in the saddle.
So, well, you don't have the problem of the, the slot manager coming to say, you hit three royals, you can't play here anymore.
Exactly.
Are you sure?
Well, sometimes you do, but but you know what I mean. In the blackjack pits, you win too much, you don't get to play anymore. So, but if you're losing, they'll let you play all you want.
Video poker, they are barring players regularly. Several of them where I'm a net loser still gotten backed off. Now, I'm in a somewhat of a unique position in that
they know you.
They know I write books. And so, I tell them I'm an expert, or they know that I think I'm an expert. And so for some, they go, well, we're going to take you at your word. And so we don't want your action. But certainly more and more casinos are backing off players. Coast used to not do that at all. Now, in Vegas, they're doing it a lot more. Several of the local casinos are. It's much, much, much more than they're used to. So if you get tired of being backed off on blackjack, you might consider video poker so you can get up to 25.
Well, I am considering it.
You'll find, though, the decrease in pay is
significant.
Significant, yeah.
Yeah, I play a lot of games at a 0.2% advantage with significant swings, because that's what a 0.2% advantage is.
Right. Well, and to find, you know, video poker that's worth $100 an hour is probably pretty difficult.
Yes.
In Vegas, whereas mm-hmm. for blackjack, that's not. What do you think your hourly EV is at 2x300?
It really depends on the game. Because sure. I was playing some games where it was about $90. I just lost a game. It was worth $340.
Yeah.
So I try to, right now I'm looking for games where it's above two. So my year goals are $200 an hour EV at 600 hours. Those are my broad brushstroke goals. And my first calendar year, it took 13 months, but I hit six figures.
Yeah.
So, and that even included the months where my top bet was 150, 2x150.
Yeah. So if you think about that, so she has a $50,000 bankroll, which she is very much under betting and can make $200 an hour. To make $200 an hour at video poker would be really tough, and would need a much bigger bankroll than $50,000.
You need a bigger bankroll. You need a bigger bankroll than that for sure.
Yeah.
And I've still had some pretty nasty. I've had four $25,000 swings in the last 4 months, up and down. So, yep.
I've had four in the last 4 weeks.
And that still takes a little getting used to. I mean, it's certainly easier than it was. I mean, there's that whole and exposure therapy. So that helped me going, the more I do this, the more normal it's going to feel. And I'm not going to be able to remember as quickly how many wells you could dig and how many people you could give clean water to with this bet that's on the table right now. I had to face that stuff from my MK years. It's like, stop thinking about that bet on the felt.
MK, is how many, missionary kid? What is MK? Is that it?
Missionary kid. Yeah, that comes out of my mouth. I don't even realize people don't know what that means. But so I had to get that out of my mind.
It's just chips.
Yeah, and at the table, my message too, when I start to get afraid of back offs or ploppies, because that can be hard too. I remember a ploppy when I left the table once going, good riddance, and it made me cry. And I was like, oh girl, you have got to get a thicker skin if you're going to survive this.
Yeah.
Or I've gone into a restroom and heard a ploppy sobbing, and I want to do a counseling session. You know, it's like, do you want to talk? And I can't do that either. So those have been challenges for me. But hopefully I can parlay those experiences to help other APs normalize some of those feelings and push through them. So the message I use in my brain now, because what you think can change how you feel, calm you down. So I use some breathing techniques, and I tell my message is, you know who you are. You know why you're here. That's it. So, yeah.
All right. Sassy Red, we thank you very, very much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
We did a wonderful job. Good luck at meeting your goals.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.